Good evening, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for coming. This week, we are celebrating the time when God gave us the Torah. God gave us divine wisdom. I want to ask you a question. The Torah actually was not given to us at Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai, which was the 6th or the 7th of Sivan, in year 2448, the entire Jewish nation was the most unifying moment in Judaism. The entire Jewish nation stood at the foot of Mount Sinai, and we got the Ten Commandments. But we didn't get the whole Torah. The entirety of the Torah was not given to us until, let's say, 40 days later. Moshe went up to Hashem, and he was taught the whole Torah, and then he came down, and he taught it to us, and so on. So why are we so happy? Why are we celebrating Mount Sinai? Mount Sinai was a great revelation. It was a great unifying moment. But we did not yet have access to the entirety of the Torah. We just had the Ten Commandments. So I want to share with you a story which maybe illustrates the answer to this question. This is a true story. There was a man, actually Rabbi Stern in the back, went to this yeshiva in Israel called Toras Chaim, which is named after a great rabbi whose name is Rabbi Chaim Kreisworth. Rabbi Chaim Kreisworth was a survivor of a concentration camp when he was a young man. And he told over the following story. He said that when he was in the concentration camp, he was sitting there and there was a fellow, an older fellow, who was next to him in the barracks. And he said, Chaimke, I'm not going to make it for so much longer. And you may not know this, but I'm actually a very wealthy man. I have an account in Switzerland in a Swiss bank with a lot of money in it. But I'm not going to make it out of here alive. So I want to give you the password. I'm going to tell you the password to the account. And I want you to commit it to memory. And after the war, hopefully you'll get out of this, you know, get out of here. I want you to find my children and tell them the password. So, okay? So this man tells him the password. Rabbi Kreisworth commits it to memory. And the old man shortly after passed away. Rabbi Kreisworth made it out of the war, moved to Israel. And, you know, in the back of his mind, he knows he has this password to a Swiss bank worth millions of dollars. He doesn't know how much. And he tries a little bit to look for this guy, but it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. And he forgets about it. Probably like 30 years later, Rabbi Kreisworth is talking to a fellow in a shul in Jerusalem, a poor man, impoverished, like a beggar almost. He was asking Rabbi Kreisworth for a donation. And Rabbi Kreisworth is talking to him, trying to be friendly. And he says, "What's your name?" He says his name. And Rabbi Kreisworth is like, "Wait, what did you say?" Says his name. He's like, "That name rings a bell." And he thinks, and he realizes that's the name of the fellow in the concentration camp who gave me the password to the Swiss bank. So he says, "Do you by any chance have a relative with this name?" And he says, "Yeah, that was my grandfather, but he died in the war. He's not around anymore." He says, "That's really your grandfather?" He says, "Yeah, that's my grandfather." So Rabbi Kreisworth says, "Do you have like identification? Could you show me that?" He's like, "When was the last time someone asked me for identification?" But he pulls out his Tudat Zehut, and he's the man. He's the grandson of this fellow. So Rabbi Kreisworth says, "I don't know how to tell this to you, but you're actually a wealthy man." He says, "Really? What are you talking about?" He says, "Well, because your grandfather told me in the concentration camp that he has a Swiss account, and I have the password, and I'm going to give it to you. Do you have money for a plane ticket to Switzerland?" He said, "No." He says, "Well, I'll loan you the money. Just go to Switzerland, give them the password, and you'll be happy." So the man, he doesn't know if he should believe it or he shouldn't believe it. You know, it's kind of exciting. He's lending me money for a plane trip to Switzerland. He flies off to Switzerland. He goes to the bank. He gives them the password. And they tell him, "Sir, there's $30 million in this account. And it's all yours." This is a true story. Needless to say, he moves back. And he's a wealthy man the rest of his life. So I want to ask you a question. When did that fellow become wealthy? Did he become wealthy when he got... The money was his whole life, right? From the time he was born, it was his. Was he wealthy his whole life? No, right? Now, he didn't spend the money probably for who knows how long. So, was it when he spent the money? Was it when he received the money? What was the point that he went?
Well, it materialized when he got to Switzerland and they said to him that he has $30 million.
Okay, very good. So the moment that he went from being a pauper to being a millionaire was the moment that he knew, that he discovered with clarity that he has the money. It wasn't when he owned the money. He owned the money his whole life, unknowingly. It wasn't when he spent the money. It was when, and it wasn't even when he received the money. It was when he found out that he has $30 million. My friends, on the 6th of Sivan, when we stood at the foot of Har Sinai as a nation, we discovered, we found out that we are the wealthiest people out there. We have divine wisdom. We didn't get it right away. We got it maybe 40 days later. And maybe some of us are still learning and we're still studying. But the knowledge that we have divine wisdom makes us the wealthiest people out there. And why is divine wisdom such a wealth? Why is it so important? As time goes on and as society degenerates, it gets more and more easy to understand and to feel how important it is to have divine wisdom. You know, when we were growing up, and for sure when our parents were growing up, and for sure when our grandparents were growing up, the morals and the values around us were not so different than the morals and the values of the Torah, of Judaism, of God. But with each passing day and with each passing year, we see a society which is controlled by the whims of man, by the whims of a society that is degenerating generations of morals. And the fact that we have this book that God gave us, this connection to the divine, this divine wisdom that tells us what's right and what's wrong, that gives us guidance how to have a family, gives us guidance how to behave, gives us guidance what to love and what to hate and what to do and what not to do. And it's from God, it's divine. There's nothing more wealthy, nothing more happy than that, and that's why we celebrate on the 6th of Sivan. I want to just end off. I have a few things here, but I'm not going to have time for all of it. I want to end off with a secular source. There is a fellow. This came out. Maybe some of you have heard this on June 30th, 2025, which is about a year ago. There was a British journalist. His name is Alistair Heath. Did anyone ever hear of him? Alistair Heath. He's the editor of a newspaper in England called The Telegraph. He's French-born. And he wrote the following, and this is beautiful. And we all know it, but it's that a Gentile could take note and could articulate it so clearly how lucky we are to have divine. Listen to this. There's something about Israel that makes people uncomfortable, and it's not what they say it is. They'll point to politics, settlements, borders, and wars. But scratch beneath the outrage and you'll find something deeper. A discomfort not with what Israel does, but with what Israel is. A nation this small should not be this strong, period. Israel has no oil, no special natural resources, a population barely the size of a mid-sized American city. They are surrounded by enemies, hated in the United Nations, targeted by terror, condemned by celebrities, boycotted, slandered, and attacked. And still, they thrive like there's no tomorrow. In military, in medicine, in security, in technology, in agriculture, in intelligence, in morality, in sheer unbreakable will. They turn desert into farmland. They make water from air. They intercept rockets in midair. We don't even realize, like, that's something special. They rescue hostages under the nose of the world's worst regimes. They survive wars that were supposed to wipe them out and win. The world watches this and can't make sense of it. So they do what people do when they witness strength they can't understand. They assume it must be cheating, it must be American aid, it must be foreign lobbying, it must be oppression, it must be theft, it must be some dark trick that gave the Jews this kind of power. It must be blackmail. But heaven forbid it's something else. Heaven forbid it's real. Heaven forbid it's earned, or worse, destined. The Jewish people were supposed to disappear a long, long time ago. That's how the story of exiled, enslaved, hated minorities is supposed to end. But the Jews don't disappear. They actually came home, rebuilt their land, revived their language, and brought their dead back to life in memory, in identity, and in strength. That's not normal. It's not political. It's biblical. There's no cheat code that explains how a group of people return to their homeland after 2,000 years. There is no rational path from gas chambers to global influence. And there was no historical precedent for surviving the Babylonians, the Romans, the Crusaders, the Inquisition, the pogroms, and the Holocaust, and still showing up to work on Monday in Tel Aviv. Israel doesn't make sense unless you believe in something beyond the math. This is what drives the world crazy, because if Israel is real, if this improbable, ancient, hated nation is somehow still chosen, protected, and thriving, then maybe God isn't a myth after all. Maybe he's still in the story. Maybe history isn't random. Maybe evil doesn't get the last word. Maybe the Jews are not just a people, but a testimony. That's what they can't stand. Because once you admit that Israel's survival isn't just impressive, but divine, everything changes. Your moral compass has to reset. Your assumptions about history, power, and justice collapse. You realize you're not watching the end of an empire. You're witnessing the beginning of something eternal. So they deny it, they smear it, and rage against it, because it's easier to call a miracle cheating than to face the possibility that God keeps his promises, and he's keeping them still. This is from Alistair Heath, a Gentile journalist from England. So this is what we have to appreciate. This is what we have to love Hashem, love God for. Thank you for giving us this divine wisdom, giving us this destiny, and giving us the opportunity to connect to it. It's so special that we're able to come together with all of you. This is Jewish unity. That's what Shavuot is all about, Jewish unity, all the Jews together at Mount Sinai, and all the Jews in Orlando together studying God's divine wisdom. Have a good evening, and have a Chag Sameach. I'm looking forward to seeing you again next time.